Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and back from his two-year book writing sabbatical, Henry Abbott. How are you, sir?
It is kind of a sabbatical. I haven't used that term, but I like it. Yeah.
We should use it more often. It's true, right? People like, although some people are forced sabbaticals and others, you know, but this was a self-imposed sabbatical to finish your book.
Yeah, no, it's been, and I guess there'll be more work to come, but I turned in, 110,000 words of second draft on Valentine's Day. And, ooh, John, it's a good feeling.
Nothing says I love you like 110,000 words submitted to your editor.
It's not on my desk right now, you know? It's a little different. Like, you know, it's the first time in a long time that if I wake up with some idea, it's like, nothing to do with it.
idea is not going anywhere because that book's already it's in another editorial process. So now the bulk of the writing's over now, right? Like they may come back with like, hey, this chapter or whatever, can you tighten it up or cut this part out or whatever? But for the most part, the bulk is done.
I mean, I'm a neophyte here. I don't really know how it goes. Mm. I know that, the first draft is such a, their language is so professional and impeccable. We're just like, you know, love it, life-changing, amazing, and, a couple of notes. And it's like, that couple of notes was like a year's work for me. Like, literally. Like
just a couple quick notes.
They were great notes. I feel the book is way, way better now. But, that's my 100% of my experience of having a professional book editor edit my book is basically that. So I'm like, I'm ready for anything. but I do kind of feel like, I'm on a journey where I don't know how many mountains I have to climb, but I have climbed a mountain, right? Like I summited one, put a little flag up there, and now we're walking down and we're just going to find out what the next mountain is. Hopefully it's fun stuff like, marketing and, illustrations are a concern. I got to find an illustrator, kind of stuff. But yeah.
Drawings.
Yeah, no, fucking great.
We like drawings. Drawings are fun.
Once you're writing like three straight paragraphs about like how a hip moves, like you're like, it's probably better for the reader.
Drawings. Yeah, I think so. Even I would imagine the most sort of like, let's read medical text journals person probably would like drawings every once in a while.
Everybody wants drawings. But I'll tell you, I'm having a real problem with it, which is medical illustrations are kind of repulsive, right? Like it's just not really... You're not going to stand in a bookstore and be like, ooh, give me some of this hip diagram, right? That's just not like, so, okay, you don't want that. And then I have gone down this rabbit hole a little bit with some artists. And like, if you draw skeletons, which is one of the ways the information is like, can be demonstrated, it looks like skateboard graphics.
And the skateboarding demo, not exactly your target audience.
That is also weird. Like, it's kind of weird to be like, I want to teach you something very important about your posture and your hips. And like, ooh, check out the guy from whatever, Vision Skateboards. I don't even know what the skateboard brand is anymore. But like, I got to work that out. That's what we're working on next.
Painstaking work. But no, it is good to have you back. The fans, as I told you via text, have been clamoring. They're like,
clamoring.
When's Henry going to be around? I'm like, listen, he's writing a book right now. It's going to change your life and make you not get injured. So just hang on for a bit.
Somebody said somewhere like, geez, seems like writing a book is a lot of work. And it's like,
yes, it is.
Yep. Yep.
I can attest to that. He's like, yep, it is a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. I'm someone who has run marathons and raised children and like, this ranks up there, I don't want to work.
Well, because think about it, right? I mean, no matter how long the book is, but let's say, 500 pages, right? But about specific, something like this, right? About this kind of work. It's not just like, all right, welcome to my story about this. Like, you have to weave it together so that, A, you don't lose the reader. B, they're interested to keep on flipping that page. It's much harder to do that than it is to write a 1,500 word story about something, right? Like, that's
definitely challenging. Part of it. I mean, I did, I wanted to get a little obsessive about the storytelling quality of it, mostly because I'd felt like I'd had a career with deadlines that didn't let me quite go down that rabbit hole. I enjoy it. I enjoy third draft, fourth draft. Like I like kind of refining and refining. So that was one goal for real. I think it does make a big difference to how people enjoy reading it, obsessing over that. Yeah. But at the same time, I started this book not really understanding the topic very well, so I had to really learn a lot. This is complicated stuff. And,
it is.
You know, I had to go on a real journey of like, wait, is it like this? And they're like, no, it's not like that. And they explain again. I'm like, wait, is it like this? And they're like, no, it's not like that. Like, you know, and so, yeah, I had a, you know, I'm not a science writer and this is a science book, you know? And
yeah,
so I had to really learn some stuff and that doesn't help the schedule, you know?
No. But you had great people to learn from. Our good friend, Dr. Marcus Elliott, among others. I mean, really, it's kind of a book about Marcus in many ways, right? You know, one of the, you know, someone we mentioned and referenced on this show a gazillion times who you've read, who you've heard, like, but a bright guy, right? Who really understands the human body in ways that we don't, but like, hey, let's make this stuff plain English so people can understand what it is we're talking about here. That's a challenge, right? Because you're basically, you're trying to translate, right? From Mandarin into English, which kind of difficult.
And I kind of see Marcus, like, you know, he goes through life and he doesn't want to be lecturey, right? He doesn't want to give long scientific explanations. And so he kind of like, you know, he'll say like, you know, your hips are really important. That's something he might say at a dinner party. It's the kind of stuff he says, right? Mm-hmm. But I need to go and be like, I need 3 hours on that. You know, like, yeah. I need you to use words like acetabulum and trochanter, right? Like, until we get that level of like shining light around and like understanding it, like, I can't really make a book chapter about this, right?
Yeah.
But I did. I made several book chapters about hips. So it's not a book about hips, but it has hips are big, man. Hips are a big part of how we move.
Huge. Well, it's interesting, right? Because you mentioned Marcus and how he has to distill the information down, right? Because if he's talking to NBA player X, he can't say, well, they need, like when David coaches players, right? I can't give you 90. No. Short. What is it? Okay. Got it. Right.
Yeah.
But you say, okay, that's good for me to contextualize. So I know what you're saying, but I need it much longer to fit a whole chapter, why it's important. Right. And that challenge is difficult.
I'll tell you, there's another problem, which is, you know, this is kind of about biomechanics. And look up like biomechanics terms and like the words that we have settled on to describe human movement are the worst words. Like it's like adductor and abductor have opposite meanings. Like who but the fuck would together. Design it that way?
Correct.
Like it's designed to confuse people. Like there's every single word of these is like not intuitive. Right. And you know, distal, it just goes on and on. Like, so like almost everything that is like an accurate description of human movement is one of those words combined with an obscure anatomy term. You know what I mean? So it's like that's a, you know, I did so much Googling, Gerard.
Well, it is so funny because, you know, if you've ever worked out with a personal trainer or anything like that, they may mention terms like abductor and adductor, right? Like both.
Yeah.
And it's funny that you mentioned that because Sham Sharania tweeted out recently about why Kawhi Leonard was missing some games and it was a strained adductor. And, you know, Twitter's a funny place or whatever. Literally all the comments are like, what the f- is an adductor? Like, what does that even mean? Right. And to your point, it's like, you're like, wait, what does that mean? Actually, can you just say like, he has a strained this thing?
Yeah. Or like, nobody wants to say these words. Like, you know, we say hip flexors all the time.
Yeah.
That's a plural word. Why is it plural? It's like, cause it's a whole bunch of muscles with names. Right. Like, but nobody wants to say all those names. Like, I wonder if I can name, like, you know, psoas, iliacus, rectus femoris, I think is one. There's like a whole bunch of them. It's like, even the doctors are like, we're just going to say hip flexors. You know, like, we're just like, this is like, it's way too burdensome. Right. Like, but in fact, we have to, you know, for some parts of this book, I had to like really understand that. Or another thing that would actually, I love this, my favorite is like, someone from P3 would explain something to me with all the terms, which they don't like to do, but sometimes they would, you know, and then I would have to go and like kind of map it out with my own research afterwards. You're like, oh, this one connects here and then that goes there. And I get it now. Like, there's a lot of that kind of stuff.
And I think it's important because as we talk about the NBA and we're heading towards the All-Star break, which is why David's not here. He is in Las
Vegas.
He's
in the All-Star game.
Some downtime. you know, he is not the All-Star game in Indiana. David's going to enjoy some U2 with the Sphere, some time with his family. These players need a break, right? We always like at this point, we're like, these dudes are dead. And they, you know, and every time you hear like players out with knee this to your point, it's just a short, quick thing. It's probably a lot more complicated what's going on with that knee, but I'm just going to say strained knee because it's easier to say. And I think that challenge, Henry, kind of is problematic when it comes to fans understanding what's going on. Because if I say, oh, my knee just hurts, well, just tough it up. You're a pro. It's like, yeah, but strained knee is much more than just strained knee. It's a lot going on there.
Yeah. And I mean, like, there's a ton of stuff you can play through, right? Like, you can, everybody does, right? Everybody's beat up. Like, But some things that we're only just beginning to learn about are the real red flags of, like, now you're at elevated ACL risk, right? And, like, mm-hmm. we need to know that about ourselves too, right? Like, yeah. There's stuff. I do stuff. I actually, before today's show, I was doing my, like, maintenance work I have to do to mm-hmm. stop my body falling apart, right? Like, yeah. I have a different lineup of stuff than you would have, right? And mm-hmm. I could tell you the whole book right now, but I guess maybe I shouldn't. But, like, yes.
We don't want to give it away.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also, it'd be just a long podcast. But yeah, there's the, you know, I think that we're at a transitional moment where, what are the inputs, right? Like, it used to be basically like a surgeon looking at a scan would say, like, oh, this looks degraded. And, like, that's not a good way to know who's at risk, right? Like, right, there's a yeah. bunch of people who are great on a scan who are actually at super high risk for a catastrophic injury and don't know mm-hmm. it. And so that's yeah. what they're doing in P3, is they're trying to be like, oh, you actually have this. You might be healthy right now, but you move in this way that is really jeopardizing something. And, like, yeah. those are the people that, and we're all those people too, right? We're sure. all in the same boat where, like, there's kind of a new lexicon coming of just, like, how we move and how we should move and how do we keep healthy and how do we keep moving? Not just, like, you know, physical therapy gets you back to work or back driving a car or back walking, but, like, they want to get you back, like, jumping and
dominating on an NBA basketball court,
and,
which is
yeah, and doing
a whole different set of work and skills to get to that point.
Yeah.
And, you know, we often talk about competitive advantage in sports. I mean, that's the whole thing. Most teams, as we know, do in the NBA do a bad job at this. That is the next sort of frontier. The team that can decide that we actually care about the players on this level and want to, that's going to be the team, in my opinion, that really, a franchise that has a leg up in avoiding injury, being the most healthy when it matters, like, developing their team, because they've got young guys they play. All, you marry those things together, the injury and the let's give these other guys playing time and work it out. That's the team that ultimately figures this all out and does well in the end.
Yeah. There's a lot of, I mean, you know, regular listeners to this podcast will know that David's always, like, a little, like, not great at player development, you know, like,
right.
You know, Marcus has a similar tone about, you know, like, he's not hating on these people, but he's just like, you know, right. They're poorly positioned in yes. as teams to, like, have these kind of data-based advantages, because even if they have the tools to, like, assess all the movement, they have their roster. And, like, you know, it's just
or they don't have to throw really... the machine on to figure out how to
yeah, I mean, like, data. You know, yeah, like, what's a safe range of motion for a joint? You know, like, yeah. you can't learn that from 17 assessments, right? Like,
yeah.
So it's kind of, things are changing right now. There's going to be a lot more of this coming, but, like, but for the moment, P3 has a giant head start because they've assessed almost 1,000 NBA players. So, like, yeah. when you go in there now as, like, a shooting guard and they get, for instance, like, how fast you move laterally, mm-hmm. they know how you compare to, like, the person you're going to have to guard. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be like, oh, well, like, if you're slow moving to your right, like, let's work on that, right? Like, no one else mm-hmm. could, you couldn't know that if you were with the right. Bucks, right? Like, yeah. you wouldn't have if you're slow compared to your two teammates at that position, right?
Right.
So that's a very, very basic example, but they have a ton more. Actually, so when I was there, they were like, oh, well, you land with this much force here. If you reduce it to this number, then you're out of the injury risk range. Like, that second thing they say there, like, no one else in the world can say that.
Yep.
Like, you know, yep. there's a bunch of examples, but yeah, it's fun. I find this stuff fascinating.
Yeah.
And important. And I think it, like, I, since I've been working on this book, I go around and talk to so many people, yourself included, where I'm like, oh man, like, you like do. I know a little bit of stuff that might, I mean, I'm not a doctor, but I'm like, man, we all need this. Everybody's body is like,
oh yeah.
You know, just well, needs I mean, you, a little
you,
better.
You sent me a whole workup to do for core body strength and all that to get yourself like, and it's like, okay, you run, but here's the thing that may help you with your running. And I'm like, this is good stuff. One of my Christmas presents from Henry this year was a something to work my psoas muscles, right? Like, I'm telling you, yeah, this is, yeah. but these things matter. Like, as you age, like, I'm telling you, you better make sure that your body's going right. Much less if you're an NBA player and your whole job is to, as David says, beat up the bad guys who are also trying to kill you. Like, you better be really good at this.
It does sound kind of hard on your body if you put it that way.
I think so. Speaking of David, he had an excellent piece come out this week about Jalen Brunson, the Knicks.
One of my favorites. Yeah.
Otherworldly point guard. I mean, we talked about him a little bit on the show, but Henry, he's just phenomenal. And he doesn't, as David so brilliantly wrote in the piece, he doesn't have the things that make typically our eyes go, oh, this guy's a really good NBA player. He's not 6'7". He's not super long and athletic. Can't jump out. None of those things. but he scores like everyone else who is 6'7", jumps out of the building all the, and that's, you know, David mentioned that skill is such a huge part of that. His mental toughness, his basketball IQ, he's so good at these things.
Yeah. And so, you know, like if you're trying to learn from watching other players and you're watching Michael Jordan, like it's really hard to learn because
correct,
he can fly, right? Like, right. And if you can't fly, then oops, that's going to be tough.
Pretty much.
But you can learn from slow guys, right? Like, and so this part where David wrote that basically like Joe Frazier had short arms, and so he would mm-hmm. be under his opponent's chin like all match long. I don't know anything mm-hmm. about boxing, but I'm just going to take David's word for that. And boxers are used to having opponents who try to evade their punches. But here's a guy who's just in their crap all game, right? Which means you're doing something that you're not used to, which is always an advantage for your opponent, right? And so this is, you know, Jalen Brunson's doing that, right? He's like, oh, I'm going to quote David here, but almost everyone tries to jump over or somehow evade the contester, or they contort their body and arm to get a clean look. Not Brunson, whose game says, fuck you, I'm going right through you. Go ahead and try to block it cleanly. And he's like, tall defenders just have no reps trying to block the shot of short dudes who do that. Put the ball in their face. And like, I feel like that's just think about playing basketball. Like, how creepy is that to have someone just yes. put the ball in your face? You're like, ah, you know, like
what's going to happen is you're going to foul him, which they do at a very high rate. I
love
doing and that. He's, while he is small, and I mean, this affectionately, he is built like a fire hydrant, right? Like, so it's not like, oh, he's 100 pounds. No, he's like a truck and it's very hard to move him and he's strong and it's battering into you. And that's not great. Right.
I went to a high school game a couple of years ago where his dad was coaching, and this guy I was sitting with was like, is that Jalen Brunson? It was mid season. He was a Dallas player then, but they were like between games in like maybe Philly and New York, and we were in New Jersey. And I was like, I don't like that guy. My internal thought, which I didn't say out loud, was like, that's a fat guy. Like I didn't think that it was an NBA player, right? Because he just was, he was sitting down. He was just so broad. Like, but
look more like an NFL running back, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, just like you, I was kind of blown away at just how, and he was wearing, it was winter, he was wearing several layers, but like, mm-hmm. but like, I was like, this is, NBA players are so much skinnier than you think they are. Like most of them. Mm-hmm. They're just like, their waists are generally like mm-hmm. marathon tiny, you know, like, mm-hmm. But not that guy. Like, I was like, this guy, yeah, hit plowing into you if you're, I don't know, like Mikal Bridges or something. Like,
not great.
That's a, yeah.
I was going to say, and Mikal's had, I'm sure, plenty of experience with that back at Villanova when they would play scrimmages and play against each other, right? Kyle Lowry, another Villanova product before those guys, but built similarly, right, to Brunson.
Yeah.
I'd say Brunson's got a little more musculature to his body than Kyle did. But right, again, another player, Kyle, who's like NBA player, but on this podcast, and I know a plus minus superstar in his prime, yeah. right?
Yeah. So you can make it work if you're brilliant. Yeah.
Gotta know the skill. So that leads us into something you started the document with, which is, all right, if you're trying to defend this dude, like, what do you do? And then it made you launch into, well, who even are good defenders in the NBA right now?
Yeah, I went down the whole rabbit hole here. Okay, so like in the early days of advanced stats, none of the young players were good defenders, basically. Like it just mm-hmm. wasn't, they were all, this was a veterans game, right? This was all like, I don't know who is a good example. But now, right now, on Dunks and Threes, like almost every elite defender is in their 20s. Mm-hmm. Is it every one of them? No. So Draymond Green, no, he's not even in the top 10, right?
He's not top 10.
Yeah. Every single one in their 20s. Mm-hmm. On offense, almost the same story, right? Mm-hmm. Steph's in the top 10. Everyone else is in their 20s, including Jalen Brunson. And then if you go through like almost every category, three-point shooting, scoring at the rim, scoring at the rim is all the people in their 20s or Kevin Durant. turnovers. almost everybody has low rate turnovers. That was kind of a surprising one to me.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, but there's one category where old people just totally reign supreme, which is free throws, right? Making everything around it, free throw percentage, free throw, number of free throws, free throw rate, points from free throws, like all of these things, right? Which made me think a little bit about something Jalen Brunson is known for, which is just drawing fouls, right? So I think we're in this thing where the game is more about movement than ever. It's more about open space than ever. You know, defenders now are people who can cover massive amounts of ground and they have to really use all their muscles and explosiveness and everything, which is hard for older people to do, right? Mm-hmm. At the same rate as young people. But if you're, I mean, I could, Damian Lillard's actually a pretty good example because as he got to like age 30, 31, his rate of drawing free throws skyrocketed, right? I think that this, we're watching the games right now. David's complaining about refs and superstar calls. And like, I think part of what's happening is, you know, the refs aren't perfect. But another part is that I think when you really master this game and you really understand how it works and you're really refining and getting to the, you know, and you become someone with a supermax contract and high expectations, you're a little behind in actually playing basketball from what you used to be when you were less famous and younger and made less money, right? Mm-hmm. So you need to carve out every edge you can. And the big available one, which makes a huge difference to winning, is what I call ref games. You just have to get really good at like initiating a play when you have the ball, or your intention is, your primary intention is to draw a foul and your secondary intention is to score, right? Like mm-hmm. it's the stuff that would not work in your pickup game. This is stuff that might not work in college, but this is what you have to get super good at. This is jumping into people and rip through all these different moves, mm-hmm. right? Things with legs as you elevate to shoot a three and all those games that happen. I think we're seeing a league where the best brains in the game are on like predominantly older players who yep. are just trying to eke out a little edge because they're not quite at their peak physically. And this is an opportunity for them.
And David would say a large reason for that is because of the reps that those older players have in their brains, right? They've seen referee patterns enough times to know this will work as on a foul call. Whereas a 20-year-old doesn't have enough reps to know this is going to work on referee X, right? But you know, so-and-so's reffing tonight. I know it's going to work, right? Like,
oh, and this is why I think you see like LeBron so irate, because he's like, LeBron's super brilliant, right? Mm-hmm. Like he has this eidetic memory and you know, like, when he, you know, drives left and brings the ball right and he has this certain defender that he's positioned a certain way and that guy rakes his arm down, like, and then the call doesn't come. Like, he's LeBron like, knows, like, you gave me that one 4 years ago. Like, uh-huh. I was counting on that, right? Like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't have that.
Well, listen, that's what makes LeBron extremely, extremely special as a basketball player. It is, you know... But it's all these guys, right? I mean, Luka's a master at it. We talked about Brunson, Harden. Peak Harden was a master at it. Part of it also was his ability to break, right? He had the number one break speed in the NBA by a wide margin, right? So when you break, other guys can't break as fast. They're going to run into you. It's like it's like insurance fraud, right? You in most states, if you step on your brakes and the person hits you, it doesn't matter what happened there at fault because they rammed you from behind. Period. End of story. Same idea here, right? Like, and that's what refs see. Oh, you ran into him. What's wrong with you? Wrong. Foul. Okay.
There it is. Well, like the best way to, like, you know, the best way to draw fouls is to just be extremely advantaged physically, right? Like Giannis usually leads the league, right? Like, you know, because
Joel Embiid. Mm-hmm.
Once they get, yeah, and for different reasons, but once Giannis has like that half step on you, like you don't have a lot of options and you don't want to give those.
Let him go.
You grab him or you're going to foul him, right? Is what you're going to do. You're going to do something high risk and out of position, right? And then they blow the whistle. So that's the best way. But like, but if you can't do that, and then you, now you got to spend a summer with your trainer in the gym working on ref games, right? Like that's where, you know, I think it's like DeMar DeRozan. Mm-hmm. He speaks this language, right? Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. he's, I don't know how old he is now. I want to say like
he definitely 34? Is mid to late 30s, 33, 34 for sure.
Yeah. Like, but he's top, he's very high in yep. this. And it's not because he's 34. People can't keep up with him, you know, mm-hmm. it's because he's worked on this, right? Like he's been working on this for a long time. Like this is a thing for him. You know, AD, KD, LeBron, Steph, like they all do this.
No, it's listen, it's, you know, for these older guys, as you always mention, it's the NBA is weird in that the way salary caps work is the way max contracts worked are by the time you're making the big dollars, you're already worse than you're ever going to be, right? Like than you ever were previously. That's just how the math works. Now, when you are LeBron, KD, and Steph, your worst is better than a lot of other people. So you're like, all right, the money is still worth it. But for everyone else, just about, it's like, this is what hamstrings teams, right? Now we're like, great, we got too many guys making $40 million. We can't play anybody else. And it's kind of the Lakers' problem right now, sort of, right? Where it's like, we got nothing to do. We have no
and
space.
The Bucks and the Suns. And like, yeah, like, you know, loading up on Supermax contracts. Like, oh, those are old guys. You know, good luck.
Yeah. and old guys who invariably will get hurt at some point.
Yeah. Old guys have some downside, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. And you know, LeBron and his crew, you know, his
meaning known, clutch.
No, meaning like what they used to. I always thought this was kind of racist sounding, but the Banana Boat crew, right? Like,
oh, Carmelo and all them.
Mm-hmm. Like they were all super influential in the union as this strange, like LeBron's been on a passage of like that age player has been overpaid, right? Well, they're underpaid early, way underpaid, but like. Sure. I don't think
way overpaid.
I'm going to predict that in 20 years, this doesn't work like this. You won't have to be old to get a Supermax salary in the future. It just doesn't make any sense, right? Like, like that's not what the billionaires want to pay for. It doesn't make sense. You'd much rather pay to keep Chet Holmgren than pay to keep 39-year-old LeBron James, right? Like,
yeah, for sure.
So it'll change, but I do think that like the weird way they were able to negotiate it, they took a little money from the younger players in their peak and gave it to the older guys past their peak. I'm like, well, just in time for all of them to make that money.
That coincided with Chris Paul being president of the players union. Chris Paul, another old guy who, you know, That's,
yeah, he was on that banana boat. Yeah.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You know, so you pointed out EPM and defensive EPM in particular, and most of the top 10 guys were in their 20s. But I did note that at least half of those guys are not starters. And I always wonder, like, you know, because, and we're better at that with advanced metrics now, right? In terms of we know who you're on the floor with, et cetera, who your opponents are, all that. But, you know, if you're playing less minutes and your role is, and you come in, I just need you to like lock this down for a bit, that might, and also if you are not a primary offensive creator on the other end, that might allow you to play better defense is partially my guess.
Yeah, for sure. I think, okay, so the offensive players who lead the league are like Tyrese Halliburton, Nikola Jokic, Luka Doncic, Joel Embiid, Shea, Steph, Jalen, Devin Booker, Giannis, Lauri Markkanen, Donovan Mitchell, Kyrie Irving. Basically, the most famous players in the world, right? Of course, they get to play because if they were benched, a coach would be fired.
Correct.
Because everybody in the arena knows they're fantastic, right? But like Halliburton, not to pick on him, but he's like a very, very bad defensive player. So like,
might be the worst in the league.
If you flipped his stats, like he might come off the bench, right? If he were super elite defensively, because nobody gets mad at anybody. If Isaiah Hartenstein, who's the best defensive player in the bench, like, comes off the bench, right? Like Xavier Tillman, Jonathan Isaac, Marcus Smart, Embiid's up there. Evan Mobley, Alex Caruso, Victor Wembanyama, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Dennis Smith Jr., OG, Draymond Green. These are the best defenders in the league. So I think a big part of it is just like everybody knows his offense. And so coaches serve up offense because their jobs depend on it, right? Like they still, it's not because they don't understand defense or value defense. It's because they don't get in trouble for sitting Alex Caruso or whoever, right? Like, like people aren't clamoring for defense. They just aren't. They just... And meanwhile, if you have a play, like let's say there's a big crunch time play and somebody is not guarded and the ball is double teamed and it causes a turnover, like everybody's on the coach. Like, why is this bad basketball player out there? On the other hand, as you know, people just sail right on by Tyrese Halliburton. Like and score very very few people notice that happened.
Correct.
It's just not a big concern. Or they'll say like, "Oh, this happened with Steve Nash. We understand. You know, you can't have energy for both places. You know, like." But yeah, I don't think it's just. I think it's I think it's what you said. And defense is also just complicated, right? Like none of these players is a great defender alone. Everyone's
Team defense is especially now the way the game is played with it's so spread out, right? And this is a sort of a comment I often make to. For lack of a better phrase, old heads who continually tell me that defense is so much better in the 80s and 90s. And I'm like,
well, shut up.
That's not true. Like, you say that. I say, well, that's not actually true. Like, if you actually turn on a game, look at the ground they have to cover. It's the size of a postage stamp. You can be really good when I don't have to move very far. But now I've got to race out to the three-point line. All this zipping, that's really difficult to do. And on top of that, if I'm playing all dudes over there, over 30 years old because they make the most money, I'm going to be bad at that because they can't run that fast and do all that, right? So,
so
this idea that like defense is like, no, it's not that. Like defensive schemes are excellent now. The offense is so good. And to David's point about the ref games that you made And, you know, freedom of movement, that was a big emphasis, right? Because look, as you often say, this is a television product, right? What's going to work on TV? Buckets work on TV. Yeah. You know,
you being bad at defense, that's going to work on TV. Yeah.
rock fights don't work on TV. It's like, oh, no one wants to watch that, right? Like, it's challenge.
Yeah. And everybody's faster. I mean, like, it's measurable. Like, they're faster now. Like, the person driving the lane is coming at a higher speed than they used to, right?
For sure.
And they're stronger. They lift weights. They didn't lift weights when I was young. Like, they were like, you can't lift weights in the sport. And it's like, yeah, you fucking can. Like, it totally. Like,
Matter of fact, you actually should.
Yeah. Now everybody does, but like that wasn't the case, you know.
Imagine the Giannis coming down the lane, and you're like, I don't believe in lifting weights. Well, you better get out the way, because that dude's gonna steamroll you.
To quit. Yeah. Yeah, but then there's also like a, you know, well, the pick on the worst era, it was isolation basketball for, like, you know, before Jordan came out, like, but
right.
That meant everybody was just catching their breath.
Yep.
You know, and like now it's like nobody ever catches their breath. Everybody's flying the whole damn time. It's like very seldom do you see someone just be like, like, with the ball in play, right? Usually it's just flying. Like, it's an endurance sport more than it used to be. And, you know, I would love to see these guys who played in there, who talk all this trash and played in the Bird era. Like,
they'd be toast.
Play. Toast. Yeah, give it a shot.
Toast.
You know?
Yeah. Because I'll tell you what Kevin McHale's not doing. Coming out of the paint to go cover a four, shooting a three. He ain't doing that.
No. They're coming to him, right? He's like, and then he's just going to throw an elbow in their face or whatever.
No, the game has evolved. You know, we always talk about stuff like, how do we improve the game? And I know that because of the way the arenas are set up, and you want to maximize the most money and the courtside seats are the most visible and all that. But with everyone being so much bigger, stronger, and faster, would widening and lengthening the court help a little bit? And not by a ton, but just a little bit, right? A little more space out wide and a little bit longer.
Oh, it seems obvious to me. Yeah. Like, you know, and I think we've talked about this before, but like, you make more money because you have more courtside seats, right? Like, it costs you the back row, but you know, more money in the front. Like, you know, I think every single arena has hockey now. So, like, I mean, just they literally all have room for this. Like, it drives me crazy. How often do you see the guy catch the ball in the corner and starts to drive, and then they whistle, it's out of bounds? Like, what a boring moment of NBA that is, right? Yep. And I wouldn't hate the idea. I mean, this is pretty radical, but like, you know, like in lacrosse and hockey, people kind of direct traffic from behind the goal.
I love that.
It does make it exciting. And like, you know, if it were a little deeper, like right now, nobody does that, right? And obviously, you've got 3 second call. You can't like just hang out there. But like, but if it went a little deeper, and like right now, David says baseline is death, right? If you take the ball there, and the defense will collapse on you, and you're in hell. But if that were another couple of feet, maybe somebody would make there could be some amazing things happening from there, right? Like
the super smart, brilliant processes like LeBron and Chris Paul would live and feast back there, right? Like
hitting the cutter from there would be highlight material, right? Like
in hockey, they used to call that Gretzky's office, right? Because he would just camp out back there and like, okay, everybody's moving around. What am I seeing? Boom, boom. Like I would love it personally. But you know, we're a little too radical for the NBA, Henry.
They do this thing in I'm learning a little about lacrosse. I've never really watched lacrosse, but
a sport I played, so very familiar.
Oh, you did? Oh, I didn't know that. It's all new to me, but I've been watching lately, and like one thing they do that kind of blew my mind was like they put the most skilled offensive player in that Gretzky's office spot.
Correct.
Which just freaks the defense out, right? Because like there's already a pick set basically for whichever way, and like the whole game everyone's just touchy because like something's coming from somewhere, and sometimes that person will fly and attack, but often they'll just destabilize the defense, right? Which is like, it's pretty fun. It's a new dimension. Yeah,
that's either your peak attackman, like your point of attack attackman, who's really like can score goals, but is like your assist man, or your best midfielder who's also like two-way, you know, whatever. Like that's where they camp out, and they're just the cutting and the moving. Right, lacrosse is similar to like to basketball in that way, right? Soccer is similar, right? Like it's just this idea of, but again, no space behind the soccer goal, just like in basketball. Who's kind of camping out and seeing where everybody's going, right? And who's moving to the free space, right? Oh, where nobody is, I'm going to go there. That's where the good stuff's going to happen. I would love it personally.
You know, a thing that, okay, this is a slight detour, but like, I think you'll understand what I'm saying here. Okay, so in basketball, we get obsessed over legal screens. It's a giant part of the game. It's perfectly defined. Well, that's maybe that's a lie, but like it has a definition, you know? Yes. And often someone was like, hey, that, meanwhile, like, you know, I know far less about soccer, lacrosse, and football, but they all have screens. And as I'm watching, I'm like, well, what is the rule? And nobody knows. Like, it's kind of like, yeah, run over here and kind of get in that player's way.
Pretty
like,
much.
And it's like, you are allowed to. Like, sometimes in some of those sports, you can kind of grab that person.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, but I'm like, this is a huge, if you're trying to get open in the end zone, if you're trying to like be that cutter that we're talking about in lacrosse, like somebody's setting a screen for you, but the screen doesn't have a definition. Like, it's kind of legal, right? Yeah. You can do some pretty nasty stuff and it's like, fine. Like, yeah. And that drives me crazy. I'm like, you guys, like, this is like a definitional, games turn on this all the time. And you're just kind of like, eh, look pretty good to me. Like, that's the rule. Like, that drives me crazy.
I mean, and people who watch basketball would argue, like, kind of happens in basketball too, right? Who's allowed to set legal versus illegal screens, right? Like,
we're fighting about, like, very, like, we're going to hear arguments about, like, how wide are your feet and where were your hips and were you moving? These are pretty specific terms.
Yes.
Like, in football, it's like, you can just fucking do stuff, but not other stuff. Like,
and in soccer for sure, it's like, you just grab that dude by his jersey and throw him to the ground. Yep.
Okay. Soccer, the jersey grabbing in soccer is like, it's like you have to do it to be good at your job.
For sure.
And because there's only one ref and you always know where he is, right? So it's like,
he's not seeing anything.
But then it's like, and sometimes it's like, on TV, you're like, this is very obvious, right? It's
like, it is.
And you're like, well, how can this be how we play this game? And it's like, well, that just is how we play this game. So get used
Thems
to it.
Be the rules, folks.
Not the rules.
Yes, correct, because there is no rule. One last note about the EPM. You know, to Henry's point, look, this is basketball's a young man's game, right? Younger people tend to perform better in those stats. People in the church, only in their mid to late 20s. Those are the people who are peaking the top of EPM. But again, I always got to do it. Shout out to the old dudes, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry, LeBron and Stephen Curry in that order, still top 15 in EPM. Kawhi and KD 9-10, LeBron and Steph 11-12 or 12-13, something like that. But just old dudes still showing positive value on the
floor. Yeah. No, I hear you. I do think I agree with your shout out, but like they get the 50 mil. You know,
so they got to play.
And I feel a little bit like it gets clouded because every broadcast, every one of those dudes, every commentator is like, that's just, LeBron, what a master, right? They just like, LeBron could fall down and like throw the ball out of bounds. Everyone's like, that's because he knows the game. It's like, you know, at the same time, like currently, like other players are much better. And player happens to be 23, like they just don't talk that way. Like, you know, he's really coming around. Youth is like this, like affliction that like ruins basketball players. And it's like, that's just an old person talking. That's all that is. Right. Like, if the commentators were 23, they would be like, no, fucking like Tyrese Halliburton is the best. Right.
I mean, yeah. And by many metrics offensively, he is the best player in the NBA. Right. Like he's so good.
Yeah. And so I feel like there is this bias and it hits the referees too. Right. Like these old guys who get the 50 mil, like they get they are the most famous players in the NBA. They are not the best players in the NBA. And so it's like, they're just a little, we miss the young ones. So there's anti-young bias, I feel, a little bit. So
until those young players now become late 20s and those guys are now, okay, now we love you now. Yeah. Now you're the ones who get to do whatever. And then we miss the 19-year-old, 20-year-old is like, you know, this is just the way the NBA works, sadly.
Yeah, once they need 90 minutes to warm up, like now they're famous, you know? Yeah. Like, is that guy still in the hot tub? Where did he go?
Oh, like, we're going to get into something about that in a minute. All right, guys, we'll be back after this brief commercial break. Oh, man. All right. So, you know, one of the great things about when we do these shows, we have these rundowns, and I knew Dave was going to be on the show today, and Henry's an early riser. So I was like, oh, I got to do my run. I'm like, I wonder if Henry got into the dock yet. So before I went outside to go on my run, I was like, oh, he must have been up at 5 because the dock's got 75 things in it. All right, we're good to go. There's something that came up, Henry, about ice baths.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, this is interesting. And those of you who don't know, I mean, first of all, Kevin Hart, comedian, people know him, has this funny, it's a YouTube show or a little bit where like he gets into an ice bath and there's another ice bath next to him and some
what's
other
it
famous
called?
Person.
It has a funny name. I forget what it's called.
Yeah. I'll look it up in a minute. And that person gets into the ice bath and they tell stories, right? And the idea is that, like, well, you're freezing your you-know-whats off. Like, you're going to be brutally honest in those moments and just, you know, talk about whatever.
You're going to breathe real weird, you know?
Listen, if you've ever been in an ice tub, it's fucking weird.
Yeah.
And it has long been assumed to be a way in which you stem inflammation and various muscle injuries that go on. But a little tweet came out attached to an actual medical journal and a report that was done that says this might not be the good idea that we all assume for a million years that this is just what you do.
Yeah, so this has been an issue that has been like a subject of argument among scientists for a very long time, right? Like a lot of elite athletes really swear by ice baths, mm-hmm. and the research doesn't really support back it up. It doesn't really back up ice at all. Like the research on ice has been not 100% against, but like a mixed bag, right? Like, and meanwhile, it's this thing that everybody recommends, right? And frankly, I mean, it feels...
Well, the one thing it does do, I'll say this, is it will stop swelling, right? Or bring your swelling down. That's the one thing we know that it does. Now, whether that's a good idea or a bad idea, that's a different story, but it does do that.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think that this was Steve Magnus, who I respect the hell out of Steve Magnus. He's a great guy and very responsible with the research. He shared this study that I think is not fully published yet, but it's a preliminary result, I think, that was basically showing that an ice bath right after your workout doesn't help. And the theory is because at that point you've stressed your muscles and they send a stress signal, and the stress signal initiates the like follow-up work that makes you stronger from the workout, right?
Adaptability, yep.
So it dampens this stress signal, but the stress is what you wanted, right? So there's different reasons to take ice baths. Like, and I think a lot of them, frankly, I do it. I don't do it regularly, but I have done it 20, 30, 40 times in my life. Not for that reason though, right? Like I do it because the sort of thing you have to summon in your soul
to do it.
Ice bath. Yeah. Is a thing that also applies to other hard things. It's yep, very similar sure. to mile 20 of the marathon, right? We're just kind of like, we're just giving a little mental challenge here. It's like breath holding, same idea. Yeah. I feel like these are kind of like, just kind of proving you can do hard things, right? Works for that, you know? But this idea that you would do it right after your hard workout so that you know, had some better effect, that seems mm-hmm. to not be the way to do it.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the early adages I learned about working out is all that soreness and fatigue that you're feeling. Like, yes, your muscles have been shredded and broken down, and it's adapting now. That's how that's how it builds back up, and it's stronger, yeah. right? Yeah. And so you are working on adapting, right? So stress is a good thing because it's teaching your body, how do I respond to this thing when it comes? And if you're prepared, you generally respond well. If not, right, generally it goes poorly. But that's the whole point. You are working to get it to respond better and more favorably for whatever the situation may be that you're training for. No, listen. Oh, let's put it like this. The fact that he's even putting that tweeting out the preliminary studies, I love that. Unlike the NBA who just told us, oh, no, rest doesn't prevent injuries, and then had no scientific data that is out there or any kind of follow-up questions to ask about. Well, tell us more. That seems like a major scientific breakthrough. I would love to learn more about that.
Yeah. They did share it with like a few journalists, but I didn't make the list, Gerard.
I wonder why. Yeah.
But I don't know. Hollinger wrote about it. I thought that was very interesting. Hollinger was like basically like, this doesn't look like a very good study. And he's a very reasonable, level-headed guy, but like it's a big decision the NBA is making here, saying like right. we're an 82 game league. Like, we don't really know that players can take 82 games. Like
that is a huge statement to make, though, right? To say that, oh no, rest that's a okay, great. If that is true, lovely. Tell us more about that. We want to know so much.
Yeah. And remember when Bill Barr said, I forget what words he used, but basically said that, like, you know, Trump was exonerated from the big Russia investigation. Mm-hmm. Like, and then it came out a month later, right? So like we all had this like deep patterning of our thoughts where it's like, oh, there's nothing much in there, right? And then no one reads the whole big long thing. And apparently there was quite a lot in there, but like, you know, similarly, we first learned about this research from Joe Dumars saying that the NBA has science. He used that word, science. It's like, science isn't like a vendor provided you with a review of the data, right? Science is like peer-reviewed journals, right?
Correct.
They don't have science. But no. But everybody was like, oh, no, they got it. They figured it out. I mean, respectable journalists were like, no, the NBA has science. It's like, you just take their word for that? Like,
right.
Like, do any scientists think they have science? You know, like,
I agree.
None that I've seen. I'm not saying they don't. I haven't seen it. I literally have no opinion on it, but I will not go. I've been around this league long enough to know that they cook up some pretty weak sauce. You know, like they're willing to go with some pretty shoddy, mm-hmm. you know, like, we looked into this and trust me.
Like, no, yeah, sure.
Not,
trust you.
You looked into it. I'm not trusting you. Yeah.
Whatever you say, guys. Sure, yeah. Sure. Trust us. Sure, sure. Yeah. Henry, something disturbing happened in the NBA yesterday. Before the Suns Detroit Pistons game.
Oh, yeah.
Isaiah Stewart apparently got into an altercation with Suns backup center Drew Eubanks and punched him in the face, apparently. And Stewart has since been arrested and released and charged with assault. The Suns come out and said, you know, there's no place for that unprovoked attack, whatever. That's just what the Suns say. We don't know because the NBA is reviewing footage right now because there's cameras all over these places. So I'm sure we'll get to the bottom of what actually happened, or at least the NBA will. But it made me kind of think, it made you think, like, why is it okay, like, for people to just come into work, into their place of work, and then just start throwing punches at people? It's a strange phenomenon we got going on.
If he'd done it, let's say that same thing had happened, you know, after a hard foul mm-hmm. on the court. Mm-hmm. Like, 0% chance there's an arrest.
Correct.
Right? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we're all used to that. But on a kind of, like, as far as, like, if I'm a police officer or district attorney or mm-hmm. the governor or the mayor, I'm like, okay, just tell me what the rule is there.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little weird. Like, we're all just, like, I know there was, like, a whole kind of boys will be boys thing, but now we're saying, like, oh, if it's in the hallway
right,
then it's or the okay. game,
right.
then now we're going to arrest you. It's like, oh. Like, so how many yards closer to the court does the law stop applying? You know, like,
yeah.
Like, it's just weird to me. I've seen so many punches thrown in so many games, or elbows, or things that are technically assault. Mm-hmm. And it's just part of the show. Can you imagine if the police ran out there mid-game and just arrest somebody?
I mean, it'd have to be pretty big police because those guys are pretty big.
And can you imagine?
To the ground. No, it's just a strange phenomenon. And look, and I understand, right? This is not, the NBA is not Ernst & Young or KPMG, right? It is not some office with cubicles. Like, if you walk into your coworker's office or whatever and just haul off and cold cock them, yes, you're going, because that's just, what is the context for that in an office setting? We seem to give it latitude because, well, they're playing a physical, violent sport. So, to your point, on the floor, we kind of understand it because emotions run high, got hit in the face or in the private parts. Or, but when you come into the arena before work, like, what? Did you two have beef? What is happening? What is going on here? And it's just,
That latitude, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but, like, that latitude is bullshit. I mean, like, it's legally bullshit, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, I imagine that if, you know, a player who got punched in an NBA game sued the city for not enforcing the law, they would win.
Yeah, for sure.
Right?
Or like, get settled out of court for whatever. But yeah.
The city can't go before the judge and say, like, well, it's a pretty physical game. We should probably have him get him dinged up a little. It's like, that can't actually be the law.
Right.
Like, the law, what's really happening is just, like, there's a stadium full of people who are okay with it.
Yes.
So no one's going to run out there.
Right.
Unless, like, Masai Ujiri is trying to celebrate his team winning the championship.
He can't go anywhere.
Better stop. like, now we'll step in. We can't have that.
Or when fans come out of their seats onto the court, then we're going to get involved because it's like, well, but what if the fan initiates it? What? It's a very strange look.
Well, if the player goes in the stands, we all know this is like Armageddon. This is like
the most end of civilization
thing ever, right?
Yes.
It just seems so, there's a very strange, I can see why the players would be a little confused. You know, like, I can see, like, Isaiah Stewart might be saying, like, you know, he's probably seen, how many times do you think Isaiah has seen someone punch someone in a basketball setting, like, in his life?
At least a dozen, probably more.
So you might be like, what the hell, now it's a problem? You know, I can see that. I'm not, like, defending him. I just think, like,
right.
It is a little weird that he got booked. Like, it's a departure.
Where we decide to enforce rules and not is just this strange place that we live in. You know, and it is, I mean, you could make that argument too, and I am not siding with him because I think he is always wrong when he does this, but this is probably Draymond Green too, right? Like, where he does this all the time, and he's like, wait, now it's a problem? It's I like, know. Well, it's always been a problem, apparently, but somehow we let it slide for however many whatevers.
There's like everything's extrajudicial, right? Like that's like that's how you have to operate if you're going to be in Draymond's job, right? You can't be like following the letter of the law, right?
It's, yeah. Yeah. No, it's yeah. It's wild stuff in the NBA these days.
I mean, luckily it's pretty rare, right? Like I know when I started covering the league, it was like everyone was just never fights all the time, you know? And
yeah,
it's so rare now. I mean, I know we're a little more this year. You know, like for a long time, the NBA really had like very few violent incidents. It's way down.
Yeah.
And then a little blip up, but like it used to be so, I'm telling you, it used to be so much more.
I mean, we know, like we've watched basketball. I mean, we were fans when we were young in the 80s, right? Like, I mean, there were brawls in playoff series, right? Everyone remembers Dr. J and Larry Bird and the chicken wing being like, oh, I mean, right?
Kermit Justin Washington, Goody, the famous hanging one. Off Alonzo Mourning's leg.
Right. This was just like, all right, whatever. But well, there's also this thing, Henry, and we've seen it, like where it's gladiator-like, right? Because the crowd gets foaming at the mouth and like, yeah. And it's like, what are we actually doing here right now? Like, is this basketball or is this Hunger Games?
Like, there are a bunch of people who love that. I've never been one of them. I've never find it like,
I agree.
Like I never liked it, but there are a bunch of people and I'm like, what are you like, go to hockey, you weirdos.
I find it unsettling to be perfectly. And no, yeah. It is, you know, and it makes sense because these are combat sports, so whatever. But if you've ever been in, you know, early when I started, you know, doing the internet covering sports things, I went to a bunch of MMA and boxing matches, like big time bouts. Henry, like it's like we're talking like primitive kind of behavior out in the crowd. Like people just like literally frothing at the over hits and punches. And I'm like, this excites you? Like you feel good about this? It's just, it's bizarre. It's just so strange.
And I'm super competitive guy, right? Like if we're doing whatever thing, like yeah. When we did the train, like a pro thing with David years and years ago, like there's a bunch of us journalists and like,
yeah,
I felt like I was just playing normally, but like David went on this whole lecture about like, I think I like fought through a screen or something, but like, you know, like to me, it was just like, this is just what you do. But to David, it was right. Like, this guy's a fucking maniac, you know? And he gave a little lecture about it, like in a good way. It was like, yeah, a, you know, yeah. I got credit for it, but like, you know, I like, you know, just going all in, but like, obviously you go all in to the line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which means like, you know, like I remember being like a cross country runner in high school, and some kid just like once you get in the woods, crazy shit can happen in the woods, right? There's no referee at all.
Some guy jumps out of a behind a tree and tackles you.
But there are places where it like goes from like your three abreast, and now it's going to narrow, and like how are you going to get down to single file, right? It's like that right. Can get a little wild. And the yeah. first time it happened, I was like, you know, I was a freshman, and like some kid just basically was like, get the fuck out of here, you know? And I remember just being like, wait, we can do that? You know what I mean? Like, if we can do that, okay. I want to do that, you know? But if we can't do that, then you shouldn't do that, right? Like,
right.
And so to me, I'm like, I'm always like, you know, like let the people who want to go really hard without mm-hmm. ruining the sport, right? Mm-hmm. Without like injuring people or whatever. And so to me, I'm like, this is where basketball has been a little frustrating because it's like, I don't think it's clear what you're supposed to do.
It clearly is not clear what you're allowed and not allowed to do. That's yeah. very obvious. No, it's wild, man. But you know, such as life, such as you know, boys will be boys, all that, yeah. Testosterone, yada yada. Well, guys, I think you're on mute. What happened? I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, now you're back. I was like, wait, okay. What were you going to say? You had like a moment.
No. Don't,
oh,
move along. Yeah,
don't mind me. Is top five time, guys. And so Henry knows how this works. You've been around long enough to know how top five works. We do our top five teams in the NBA yeah. right now. You say your five, I say my five. We go back and forth until we get to number one. Okay. The number five team in the NBA right now, according to Henry Abbott, is?
Pelicans.
Woo! They were my top five last week, I believe. Yeah, look. We said it before. If Zion plays, and he's not even like playing like super well. He's just good right now, which that might be actually a blessing in disguise.
So to be honest, I did this like with recency bias. I literally watched a YouTube video of him shooting 15 for 21 last night. And then I was like, yep. Like if he's going to like, I literally, that was in my head. I'm like, that's a playoff. The way he was getting those buckets, I was like, this is a playoff situation right here. So I don't really think they're going to win the championship, but I couldn't.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm with you. And look, it we've seen that team do well in the playoffs without him. So if he's to be able to not even do that all the time, but he does like all-star level, or like that's a team to watch out for. My number five team, the Los Angeles Clippers. Really good comeback win last night against the Golden State Warriors. No Kawhi Leonard. Look, the Clippers, we said it all along. If that team stays healthy, there's going to be a tough out. They got length everywhere. Kawhi is fucking unreal. Paul George. They're a good team. Harden, Russell Westbrook off the bench. They're a very, very good team.
I think they're like the best offensive team since when? Like since the last couple since months, I think, is that right?
Since Christmas, maybe? Yeah.
Something like that, yeah. So that's why they're my good. Fourth team. The Clippers are my fourth team.
I like it. My fourth team, OKC. Look, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is probably your MVP right now. When Joel Embiid was healthy and playing, like obviously he was kind of running away with it, but Shai was having his best season as a pro. We mentioned 20-something-year-olds. Well, Shai's a 20-something. and a mid. He's not even like 26 yet, I don't think. So, look, I love what they're doing. I worry about them because they didn't make that move, but they're really, really good.
What if they win it without making that move, right? That's like the biggest show-off thing of all time.
Well, then it's like Sam Price is like, I've been telling you I'll be smarter than you motherfuckers all along. Now, look, here it is.
yeah. All right, my third team is the Cavs.
I don't disagree. Listen, they're fucking 9-1 in their last 10. I mean, they're guarding Donovan Mitchell. David loves Donovan. He's a really good leader. Obviously, excellent player. Garland, Mobley. I love those guys. They're my number two team. My three team, the Timberwolves, still playing well despite their putrid offense. They can guard the hell out of people. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who we mentioned earlier in the show, really, really good defender. And if he's knocking down threes, it's a tough one.
Yep. That's actually my list is like, I have a little section that says apologies, and the Timberwolves made my apologies list. They probably should be, they should be on here, but
it's okay. You get kicked out of the top five. Sometimes it happens, whatever.
Yeah. This is my most like daring top five probably ever. It's like, there's a lot of like unconventional stuff here. Okay. Second team for me is the Nuggets. Cause I just did the game of picturing the playoffs and how it's going to go. And you know that they haven't been like full bore, and like they still have Jokic, and I just feel like it's easy to picture them doing very well.
They're on the highway right now in a car, Henry, and they're going 60, and they're just like, it's fine. Like, they're going above the speed limit, but not crazy above, but like, yeah, we're okay, don't worry about us. The Nuggets are in my apology section, but not because I know what they're doing. We're waiting right now.
Yeah,
my number one, I said Cavs are my two. My one are the Celtics, because they're the fucking Boston Celtics. They're really good at basketball.
It's been a weird season. You know, like there's not that much parity anymore. You know, like it was a season of parity for the first 6 weeks. And now it's like, there's really one elite team, and there's a little pack of, I think now maybe it's like six or seven teams that are behind them. And then there's like nobody else.
Yeah.
Right?
That's
like,
it. Yeah. Look, the Celtics top to bottom, I just, the way they're winning and everyone who they have on their roster right now, I mean, it's looking like it, especially with Embiid going down, and who knows what he's going to look like when he comes back. And the Bucks, nobody trusts them or believes in them in the East. You know, the Cavs are probably something, but like, they're so young and not playoff tested yet, right? Like, so this looks like for Boston, like if they don't do it this year, it's going to be one of those stories, right? Well, when are they going to do it? And we know you need luck and all the things have to kind of work out for you, but.
Saying goodbye to Marcus Smart and hello to Porzingis was like I would love a like super detailed breakdown of like what their thinking was, like what they knew, what they saw. Like, it seemed really risky, you know. Like,
yeah, Marcus for sure.
Smart has been the heart and soul of that team for a long time. They're like, no, we're gonna get this maligned giant guy, and it's just gonna work. And I was like, oh, actually, the other thing that occurs to me is like, maybe it's way simpler than this. Maybe it's just who has Jrue Holiday, like. Oh, well, you're the favorites.
listen, you know, you're not wrong. And David and I talked about this. The beauty of having Holiday, White, Brown, Tatum, and Porzingis as your starting five is they don't have to double anyone ever. And that when you don't have to be out of rotation defensively, that is such an advantage. They just don't have to. Like, does it mean that Drew's not going to stonewall? You don't shut people out in basketball. It's not how the game works, but you don't have to commit extra resources because they know these guys know where to be. We understand the team concept, et cetera. And that no other team has that advantage where they don't have to double anybody. Everyone has to send help because they're compromised. That's huge. And you see what Joe Mazzulla said? Because they were like, oh, you know, only Tatum and Brown made the All-Star team. And he's like, well, it's obvious that nobody prioritizes winning in the All-Star game, because it was like, why isn't Derek White? And like, well, yeah, they don't. Because if they did, those guys would be All-Stars too. But that's not what the All-Star game's for. That's a game that's just about buckets. So, and the most famous people. Only famous bucket getters go to All-Star games. That's it.
When I went to my first one, I interviewed Chauncey Billups afterwards. I'm like, was this a good basketball game? And he's like, oh, no, the worst. Like, he's like, I hate it. Like, nobody's playing hard.
You know, Jokic hates the All-Star game. It's just, it's you know, that is not for those kinds of players. They just, it's not their cup of tea.
No.
All right, guys. We will be back next week. We're going to do a show Monday. You're going to be on that Monday show because David's still going to be Vegasing. We'll figure out some stuff to talk about. Maybe we'll talk about soccer on that show. I mean, you know, a lot of basketball to talk about. I mean, right? Unless you want to talk about the All-Star game, we can, but
There's always something. Like, something will emerge. I don't know. We're going to talk about Mac McClung or something. I don't know. There's always going to be like...
What if Matt McClung wins the dunk contest again?
Everyone's going to be a buzz about something stupid is what happens 100% of the time at All-Star Weekend. I don't know. Celebrity thing or a politician or yeah, I don't even know what's going to be. But yeah, we'll be bursting to give our views on something from Indiana. Yeah.
All right, guys. Have a good weekend. We'll see you next week.